A duck blind on Real Foot Lake in northwestern Tennessee becomes the unlikely site of a double homicide. Then the suspect's body is discovered floating in the murky waters nearby to the scene of the crime. Murder, murder,
Maya Miliete goes missing from Chula Vista after a fight with her husband, leading friends and family to believe he might be involved.
Tune in to Murder, Murder News, the Listen Edition, every Friday for the biggest true crime cases making headlines each week.
Subscribe to Murder, Murder News, the Listen Edition, wherever you listen to podcasts. Murder, Murder News.
This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
Welcome to Reverie True Crime. On today's episode, I have with me the wonderful and talented, amazing Ellen Marsh. We talk about life during lockdown, true crime, missing persons, OWD, and her work on Broadway, and so much more. So let's get started with this very special episode. So, I kind of wanted to talk about first this last episode of OWD, but first, do you want to talk a little bit about how you got started with Obsessed with Disappeared and how that all came together with Patrick?
So, Patrick and I are old friends from college, and we have been wanting to collaborate on something for a really long time. We've always both loved true crime. We both always loved theater. And so, even though we've sort of like been each other's champions for many, many years, we haven't ever had anything that we could collaborate on. And it was a total fluke that we started it, you know, right before the Panda Express. And like, cause we started recording in the beginning of March, and then, you know, everything shut down. So everyone thought it was a project that we did because of it, but we had actually been planning it for we've been planning on working together for a couple of years, but we've been planning on this podcast for like a year before. So yeah, so it's just kind of like the timing was all just right to start doing that, you know?
Well, I wanted to talk about, I did not plan to talk about it, but this past week's episode about Morgan that went to the Metallica concert, I could tell you got sad during that, and I did too. Like, my mood by the end of that episode had just bottomed out completely. I was just like, this has been such a huge topic lately too about women and our safety, and there's this one lady that I watch on TikTok, and she makes these keychains that are like self-protection keychains, and she has one where it's like a taser and a car alarm sound and a window breaker and all this stuff. And I'm just like, we really are living in a society where, you know, we have to do this.
Yeah, it's our responsibility. I did get really emotional. I don't know if you watched our Friday Night Live last night. But we had a Friday Night Live, and we tell a lot of like the secrets sort of like behind the scenes in our Friday Night Live. And I got really, I broke down actually, in the middle of recording because, you know, at the end of the episode.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the end of the episode, you know, I felt the need, you know, to talk about I gave us a couple of safety tips, and I just started crying, and I said, why is this, you know, maybe it was edited because it's a comedy podcast and, you know, the host isn't supposed to break down in the middle of the podcast, but it is very real. We are talking about very real things. And what just upsets me is how defensive women have to be rather than teaching men to be more respectful and not so angry and not so violent. We're teaching women how to react to men's violence. And even though that's a reality, it still makes me sad. It still makes me sad that I have to, you know, do all of these things just to walk down the street and feel safe or just go to Target. You know, I went to Target the other night. I had to teach until 9 o'clock and I went to Target at about 9:30 at night. And it was only then that I realized, oh my God, I'm parking so far away from the store and it's dark and this is scary. And why, you know, so that episode, the Morgan Harrington episode, just kind of brought to light how if you are not careful as a woman, you could get seriously hurt. And men don't have to worry about those things. They really don't. Yes, men get hurt. Yes, men are victims of violent crimes, but it's just not the same.
Yeah, not as often. And, you know, I saw someone tweet that men have to know this is true because men that have daughters teach their daughters how to protect themselves against men. So they know.
It's
so sad.
It's very sad. And, and being in the true crime world, you know, most violent crimes are committed by men. Yes, there are some women who also commit violent crimes, but most violent crimes every day are committed by men. And sometimes, you know, I love my job and I love the stories we get to tell and I love keeping older stories alive. But sometimes I just, I wish it just didn't, you know, usually involve women being the victim. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard. It just got to me. And, you know, she was young and she had her whole life ahead of her. And I have a daughter. I have an 11-year-old. So knowing that, you know, these stories hit a little closer to home just makes me a little more emotional. And then Patrick just edits those weepy parts out.
Oh, my gosh. So besides working your butt off on Obsessed with Disappeared, what do you like to do in your free time? Or do you have any free time?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I haven't had free time since about 2002. Which is probably the year you were born. No, I mean, you know, I have so many, I teach, you know, before the pandemic, I was, you know, on Broadway and I performed and then I teach voice, I teach acting, which I love. I have my 11-year-old. I also have, some other side project podcasts that are just a little bit more for fun. I wrote a web series that was shot entirely on Zoom called Gallery View, which was really fun that I did this summer with my writing partner. So I don't, this free time you speak of usually comes in the form of like eating an edible and watching Housewives.
Yeah.
So if that counts as a hobby, sign me up, you know?
Okay, so you were talking about Broadway. What made you realize that you wanted to be in the theater?
Oh, God. stupidity. I have no idea. That's a great question, and I don't know the answer. I always knew that I wanted to do theater. I didn't know. I always wanted to be on Broadway. And that was just, I don't remember ever wanting anything else. I don't really remember that not being, you know, my ultimate goal. I mean, you just do, you know, it's so funny because when you're young, you sort of create this dream or this goal and you're like, well, I guess now I have to do it because I put it out there and I said it. So I guess now I got to put all the work into it. And you don't really know what that means. Yeah. You don't know what that means when you're like 12 years old. You don't know what it means to like wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and to go to an audition and cross your fingers to be seen. You don't know what all that means. So, it was always my goal and it was always, my dream. And I say this with all sincerity. I truly, truly am one of the lucky ones because, you know, some of it is just luck, you know, and, you know, being at the right place at the right time or, you know, really kicking ass one day.
But you are so talented.
Yeah. You're very sweet, but you are so
talented.
There's so many talented people. So it's just luck. And yeah, I really am one of the lucky ones. So thanks for asking that.
No, you're welcome. Did you start like in high school knowing that you wanted to go to college and study the arts and things like that? Or how did did it start like really young and you knew when you were little, like that's what I want to do?
Yeah, when I was little, I just, you know, the shows would come through my city, you know, come through San Francisco and my parents would take me to them. And I was like, well, I want to do that too. And then, aww, you know, yeah, I really flourished in high school. I played sports and did theater. And then I had to make a decision. What's my career going to be? Is it going to be sports or is it going to be theater? It was never going to be sports because I'm, you know, 2 feet big. And so then, yeah, I just was like, that's, you know, people used to make fun of me and they were like, that's Ellen. She thinks she's going to be on Broadway. And I was like, I'll show you.
And you did.
And I think I mean, it's just so funny to say, but I did. I had such a one-track mind. Yeah, that's all I wanted. But yeah, I mean, my love, my passion really, really flourished in high school, because I feel like that's like really where you, like, you start to really know what you're good at and, you know, like hone your skills. Not to say that people don't, you know, do things, you know, later in college and there beyond. But yeah, so it just kind of grew from there, for better or for worse, Paige.
Well, what's one play that you did and you were like, this is it. This is why I wanted to do it. And I'm so happy that I stuck with it. Like, what's maybe one of your favorite ones you've done?
You know, I think Kinky Boots on Broadway. Yeah. Because Kinky Boots had a great message. It was a great show. It was a great score. It was fun to do. You know, all the accolades that you dream of, you know, of being on the Tonys and, you know, that all came true for me through Kinky Boots. And I think the message of it was very powerful. I think it really like, blindsided people sometimes. You know, they didn't really like think that, you know, they thought it was like, you know, drag queens and all these like funny, but you know, the heart of it, the heart of the show was really magical for people. So, So, yeah, I think I'd have to see Kinky Boots. Did you ever see it? Did you ever see Kinky Boots?
I have heard all about it, but I want to. Is it, like, on YouTube or something where we could watch it?
I don't think it's on YouTube. I don't know. Maybe parts of it are on YouTube. I don't know, actually. That's a really good question.
Yeah, I remember reading all about it, you know, and I was just like, oh, you know, I wish I could go.
Yeah, you know? I know, exactly.
That's so awesome.
Aw, thank you.
When did you first realize that you were into true crime and, like, missing persons cases and things like that?
I think, you know, I've always been fascinated by true crime. I mean, I kind of like what draws any of us to it, you know, the getting inside of people's minds and understanding. I mean, it's such a weird subgroup in our culture that is so widely, you know, it really piques all of our odd interests, you know, like getting in the minds of people. And so I've always been drawn. I mean, the first true crime case that really piqued my interest was, you know, the Scott and Lacey Peterson case, because I was from Northern California. You know, I grew up around there. I knew Modesto. I had played soccer in Modesto. So I think that was one of the things, obviously I didn't know them by any means, but that was one of the things that was like, oh, this can happen anywhere. And, you know, I vividly remember the OJ trial. So, you know, back then, before true crime was like on every doc on Netflix, I sort of loved it. And, what I love about, missing persons cases can really, really, as a parent, really break my heart. But what I do love about our show is I really love keeping the older cases in the conversation. Because as DNA, you know, testing changes, forensic testing changes, there are some older cases and mysteries that are being solved and will continue to be solved.
Yeah.
And Patrick and I always say, what if one of these cold cases that we cover gets solved? What if? And we're part of that. So, you know, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
That would be such a contribution to the true crime community at large. But that's what made us really want to do this show.
Yeah. Oh, well, I know that y'all are definitely doing that, because every week I can't wait to hear which one y'all are going to talk about next. And y'all do it in such a way, though, that is so respectful.
Right.
But it is still, you don't feel bad laughing at anything, because it's not at the victim's expense or their family or anything. It's totally so respectful. And that's such a fine line to really walk sometimes. And y'all do it so perfectly.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. And I think, you know, we are both parents and we are both very emotional people.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are things, there's always, you know, something to laugh at, but at the heart of it, the crime is always very, very serious. And, you know, I always, you know, if ever it involves, you know, suicide or addiction or anything like that, I do think that can like trigger people. So I do think that, you know, offering, you know, help and assistance, which I try and do at the end of the episode, which is very, very important to me. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, there is so much horrible stuff going on in the world that we can't laugh True. At. And, you know, if we can laugh at a silly, like, reenactment actor or something like
that. Yeah, like somebody's hair or, you know, yeah.
We had Patty Vaughn's family. We get a lot of families reaching out to us. They don't always want to come on the episode for various reasons, but they're always very, very sweet. And Patty Vaughn's family reached out and said, "We loved your episode. Thank you for honoring our cousin."
Aww.
We didn't have perms. That was our natural hair. And I was like, "Kathy girl, I'm sorry, that looked like a perm." And she was laughing, and it was great.
Oh,
so yeah, no,
gosh.
And getting the you know, the seal of approval from families is really important to us, and
it
feels good because they know what we're doing. You know, we're bringing light, we're bringing the case, you know, back to the forefront. You know, with tens of thousands of listeners that could possibly help, and we're doing it, you know, with a little comedy sprinkled in there. So
yeah. So, your daughter is 11, you said?
Yes, 11 years old.
So, have you started to talk to her about, like, being safe and, like, all these things? Or is it, when did you start to, like, kind of teach her?
Like, know,
unfortunately, I have to teach you this, you know?
You know, it's so funny because I was just doing this before we were chatting. I was just doing this meet and greet. And someone asked me a similar question. And in terms of her own safety, we've been having those conversations since she was about 2. You know, I, like, when she was in the bathtub, I used to say, now that, you know, who's allowed to touch your vagina? Who can see your vagina? You know, who, you know, like, having all those conversations and, you know, normalizing what her body is and who's allowed to see it and touch it and be around it. Because, you know, when I was little, I was taught, like, you know, doctors are your friends, but then you watch Athlete A and you realize doctors aren't always your friends. And, you know, you can turn to police officers. Yeah. And, you know, that girl in England, Sarah, was abducted by a police officer. I mean,
yeah,
you know, truly,
mm-hmm.
there is no, you know, safe zone anymore, which is horrible to say. But yeah, no, we have those conversations, and we have conversations about how, you know, men are supposed to treat women. And there was a boy in her school last year who flipped up a girl's skirt, and Lola was so mad about it. And that violated her boundaries and her space. It wasn't Lola, but, but then I say, what would happen if that were to happen to you? And so these are conversations that you have to have, you know, when they're very young, about being aware of your surroundings, about, you know, stranger danger. And, you know, they're all very, very real. And we grew up, you know, we live in Jersey City, which is a city, and, you know, we spend a lot of time in New York. And yeah, so those are conversations that we've been having for a very, very long time, sadly.
Yeah. I know one of my friends a long time ago got me on one of her episodes that she was doing about this documentary called Tickled. And, it's about these boys that got trapped into getting into these tickling contests, and it was actually kind of like a sexual thing, and it's something that I literally never thought about. She brought up the fact that family friends or family members can tickle children, and they kind of get away with it because nobody looks at, like, a close family friend or, like, a family member and thinks, oh, they're tickling the child, you know. And I was like, wow. Like, I never thought about even having a conversation with any of my little cousins or anything about, like, if you don't want someone to tickle you, say no. Because also, like, when the kids laugh and they're saying stop, but they're laughing because they can't help it. It's things like that that just make me go, wow.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, again, you know, sort of talking about, you know, Athlete A, or it was Athlete A. There were the two documentaries on that, that doctor with the gymnasts. I mean, He was their trusted friend.
Oh, yeah.
He was their doctor. They loved him. Yeah. The families loved him. He was respected. He was revered. And he would do it in front of the parents. But these are things, you know, raising a daughter. It's pretty wild. It's pretty crazy. But I always, you know, I always try and emphasize to her to, you know, talk to me. We always try and have like open dialogues about our bodies and, you know, how we, you know, protect them and the way that they, you know, we want to be treated. And she's a very wise little child, for sure.
Oh, I bet she is. I bet she is. Oh, my goodness. So can you remember, like, the first televised trial that you just could not stop watching?
I mean, I guess OJ, but I also remember, I remember Anna Nicole Smith's trial. I remember seeing that. I actually love, whenever we do an episode, I love when there is a video that I can watch, of anything. But, other than those, I can't really, I mean, I loved, I also love interrogation videos. Those are my, I love Chris Watts's interrogation video. It's like 20 minutes long.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, yeah, yeah. And then I was like, oh, man. So I just watched one, this girl who killed her parents because they were like tiger parents, you know? And she killed her parents and tried to make it look like an accident. And they slowly...
Are you talking about...
Jenny Pan, I think her name is?
Yeah, I did one episode of that for Patreon. Yeah. That was wild.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And she was, like, saying... They caught her in all these lies, because how can you, like, keep up with these lies? Yeah. No, I know. I love interrogation videos. I feel like I would be a really, really good interrogator. I feel like that's like my next.
I think my you next would be
in life. I'd be like, it's okay. You can tell me what you do. What you do. Just tell me.
Oh my god, I love it.
That's my next career. My next career. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. So this leads me to, since you're talking about the interrogation parts of it. Okay. So what goes through your mind before you call the police stations?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm mostly just looking for more answers, because something that I never realized before doing the podcast was how different every city's set of rules are. You know, some cities you can make, you know, a missing persons claim if they're gone for 5 minutes, and some towns you have to wait 3 days. Like, what? Like, in what world? So mostly when I call the police stations, it mostly comes out of so much confusion. Yeah. And like, I'm like, somebody give me answers. And I only call if I can't find the answers online or the answers that I'm really looking for online. First time I called, I was like, the worst they can say is like, we can't help you. And they hang up, right? I mean, they don't know who I am. You know, they don't pay attention when I say what podcast I'm calling from. So I just am like, you know, maybe, you know, I'll get like this information, but a lot of times the information isn't public. And sometimes they don't even know the answer because I feel like it's so arbitrary. Like, I'll tell them a story and I'm like, well, back in, you know, 2008, you guys, the rule was this. And they're like, oh, it was? Let me check on that for you. I'm like, how do you not know this? So it's wild, but I just treat it like a little acting exercise, honestly. I just treat it like, you know, the worst they can say is no. So I just usually go in, but a lot of people think I'm crazy for doing it. So it's okay.
No, I don't. I just could never, because I'm so introverted. My anxiety. No, no, ma'am.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. All right.
Oh my gosh. So how long have you and Patrick known each other? When did y'all first meet? And kind of like, what was your first impression of him and vice versa, do you think?
Well, we met freshman year of college, and he always says that I was too cool for him. And I probably was, aww, because he remembers meeting me and I don't remember meeting him. And he then hated me because I didn't have time for him, which I still don't have time for him, if I'm being honest. But yeah, we met and we just like, we met freshman year, and then we became friends sophomore year. And yeah, we were at Emerson College in Boston. And Emerson is a school that's like really, really geared towards go-getter type of people. It's really a college that it's what you make of it. All the opportunities are there, but they're not like hovering over you, making sure you're doing stuff, making sure you're, you know, being included. So we're both really kind of go-gettery people. So we both kind of like, you know, gravitated towards each other. And then we've just always, always stayed friends. I mean, every, you know, he's been to my opening nights, and I, you know, used to help him with his podcast back when he was like a struggling podcaster. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we've just like always, you know, he met Lola when she was like 2 days old. I met Daisy when she was like a day old. Yeah, we've just, it's more like family. Like, he's more just like my family. So yeah. You know, we fight like brother and sister. You know, he hung up on me the other day, and I was like, grow up! And then I told him, I was like, I said something on the podcast. I was like, if I put fertilizer in your mouth, will you grow up? He's like, oh, did you like learn that at the Comedy Cellar? I'm like, you know, so. Yeah. So anyway, that's our dynamic. People either love it or they hate it. When we first started the podcast, people thought I was too hard on him. I was like, just wait. She's going to come back at me. People were like, leave Patrick alone. You're so mean to him.
Oh my gosh. No, I love the dynamic. Like right away, I was like, why haven't we gotten this sooner? Like, we needed you and Jillian and Patrick on one podcast together. We need that.
Yeah, I love Jillian. Yes. Oh yeah, for sure. That'll happen. She'll come. She doesn't like missing persons cases though. That is the one thing. Jillian does not like things without an ending. Like, we've talked about it so many times. She's like, I don't know how you guys do it. I could never. She doesn't like not having answers. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't either. It frustrates me to research a unsolved case or a missing persons case, because it's like, how do I even end this episode when there is no ending? It's frustrating. Well, going back to theater a little bit, what was it like to step out onto a stage for the first time? Were you ever nervous, or did it just come naturally to you?
I do suffer with nerves. So if ever I'm in an opening night, or if I am like understudying a role and I've never gone on for it, I am genuine. I just need that like one laugh, or like I just need to, you know, forget that the audience is there for a minute. But I do suffer with nerves. But when you're in a show, you know, I did Kinky Boots for 6 years. When you're in a show for 6 years, it just is like, you know, it's just like clocking in at the Gap. You know, there's really like no difference. Obviously, we're performing and it's fun. But, you know, pretty much once you're in a show for like a year, anything that can happen has happened. So, you know how to like deal with all the sort of like ups and downs of that. So, yeah. So I don't really get nervous anymore, but I do get nervous on an opening night.
So when did you decide to start teaching yourself?
I actually started teaching about 13 years ago. One of my co-stars in Priscilla, his sister was taking lessons with a woman, and she was sort of telling me what she learned. And I was like, well, that's not right. And I didn't say anything. And I was like, wait, why are people teaching children to sing like that? So I just started like, you know, I've always loved teaching. But, you know, again, with like imposter syndrome, like you don't think you know enough, or you don't think you, you know, have enough knowledge. And so I just started like teaching voice, because I've studied voice my whole life. And I studied, you know, I know, you know, about technique and vocal hygiene and all these things. So I just started teaching because I saw a lot of really bad teachers out there, and I just like wanted to give kids the opportunity to like not be taught by hacks. There's a lot of hacks. And so I just kind of like jumped in there, and I ended up like loving it. And, you know, I'm very, very close to all of my students, and I kind of act more like a little bit of like a manager to them than anything, because I like get very invested in their little careers on Broadway and everything. So I started teaching, and it's a huge, huge part of my life now. And obviously, you know, more with the pandemic, because when I was on Broadway and teaching and had Lola and everything else that was going on, I didn't have as much time for teaching. So now we've, you know, doing it all on Zoom now. So it's been pretty crazy. Yeah.
What is so funny to me is that I'm learning things through TikTok that I never knew before. And the fact that I came across a TikTok that pointed out in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, there's like this transatlantic like voice. And I was like, you know what? I always wondered what that was called, that it sounds like another accent, but it's just English and British kind of. Is that how you would explain it?
Yeah, like sort of in those old movies where they talk like this, you know?
Yeah.
Why are you talking like that? Yeah. Like, you know, hello. Hi, Dad.
Yes.
Like, yeah, it's
love
a very,
that.
Very, yeah. Yeah, I know. TikTok is, I get most of my information on TikTok now as well. Like, I the amount of times in a day I say, oh my God, there's a lady on TikTok who ... or there's a guy on TikTok who ...
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's embarrassing.
Absolutely.
It's genuinely embarrassing.
Because, I mean, right before this panoramic, I was like, there is no way I'm downloading TikTok. That's for kids, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to download it and see what it's about. And that now I'm at 3 o'clock in the morning, like, giggling my ass off. Like,
oh my God. Oh my God. The amount of, I have friends, we just communicate with each other, sending each other TikToks. That's, if you look through our texts, it's just sending TikToks back and forth. That's all we do. So yeah, that's where I am in my life too, Paige, okay?
Me too.
Just sending TikToks back and forth. Send them my way. It's like TV to me. I don't even watch TV anymore. I just watch TikTok.
Exactly.
Yeah. What are you doing? Watching TikTok?
Oh, yeah.
I thought you were watching it. Yeah. No, just staring at my phone.
Yeah. One thing I've always wanted to know, by the way, about acting is it hard to disassociate yourself from the character you're playing? Or do you sometimes get, is it hard to kind of snap out of that character?
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, in a moment, you know, sometimes, you know, in the moment, you're very, very much in it. And then generally when you come off stage, you can kind of like collect yourself and take a breath. And, you know, there are some people, like I've heard stories of very method people who like show up on set as a person, you know, or show up to the theater as that person. And that's never that's never really been my thing. But I, you know, I have got very, very, you know, emotional and in the moment. But then when you snap out of it, you're like, well, now I'm just backstage at a dusty, dirty theater. Like, you know, I'm not playing. I'm not Anita and it's not the 1950s, you know. So yeah, I've never found that to be challenging. Yeah. But I do know people who are like backstage and they're like, don't talk to me. I'm like, okay, you're too much for me right now. You're very extra.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. No. Not for me.
So I don't remember if you were, maybe you brought this up on an episode one time a long time ago, but you did say that you were in a kind of toxic or abusive relationship, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yep.
I think it's pretty, like, important, especially doing kind of what we do in the genre that we do it in. What about your experience could you possibly talk about? How much of it would you possibly want to go into? And maybe your advice for other men or women that are going through abuse in relationships?
Yeah, no, I mean, I talk about it, you know, pretty openly because, you know, I went through this, you know, very, very horrible relationship with a narcissist. And, you know, I don't have a doctor and I'm not a doctor. I don't have a degree, but like, I realized that what I went through wasn't very foreign, to a lot of women actually. And I do believe that, you know, sharing stories is a part of healing and, you know, and I do think that hearing other people's stories allows other people to feel less alone. So I realized that by sharing my story, not only was I on my own healing process, but then I was making other women realize that they weren't alone because what I dealt with was a narcissistic and I was with a narcissist and a sociopath. And, you know, the emotional sort of abuse that I suffered, I felt very stupid, because I was, you know, I was duped, and I didn't, and it was embarrassing. And so when I came to find out that other people had suffered this abuse, that made me feel, you know, less dumb for the manipulation that I had sort of fallen for, knowing that I'm, you know, I'm a smart person and I'm a strong person. But at the time I was so desperate for understanding, that I vowed when I, you know, was coming out of it that I would help others, you know, if I could. So that's sort of like what I've done. So I'm pretty, you know, open, about it. And I think that, you know, with the rise of TikTok and with the rise of, you know, podcasting, that a lot of women have been reclaiming their voices, and more people are kind of coming out of the shadows and talking about this kind of abuse rather than just kind of, you know, leaving it in the shadows. So yeah. When I sort of brought my story to the forefront, I wrote a one-woman show about it, called I'm Sorry What, and oh, I did a couple of podcasts specifically just on narcissistic abuse. I was sort of blown away by the amount of women that reached out to me, you know, mostly on social media, to express that they had, you know, been through something similar. So I think keeping these conversations going is really, you know, really important. And I think that, any part of that conversation that I can be a part of, I'm always willing to, because, you know, I do think I'm a strong person. I do think I'm a smart person. So if someone can look at me and say, oh, look at, you know, she has kind of her shit together a little bit and she fell for it, then that can, like, you know, inadvertently help someone else. I'm always pretty open about it. It was a crazy situation. And you know, we were in court for a year.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, tried to have my daughter taken away from me, and it was pretty ugly there for a while. So, but thanks for asking about that. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm an open book. I'm an open book, Paige. I'm pretty transparent. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. You know, I try to talk to people about the two abusive relationships that I've been in. One was more physical, but one was more mental. And I literally have 2 years of my life in my earlier 20s that I cannot remember, because this person brainwashed me so bad that I don't remember that chunk. And it's so frustrating to me, because my mom will remind me of things and I'm like, I still don't remember that. I don't remember. I said, I believe you, of course, but, you know, I just don't have those memories at all.
Yeah.
And that kind of makes it a little bit harder to heal, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is, there is a part of your trauma that, like, you have for sure blocked out, and that's self-preservation. Right? That's something that, like, your mind has decided that order for you to heal, you can't remember that. And it's amazing what the human body can do. It's amazing what we can do, that you can actually block that out. And that's survival. That's survival instincts. That's, you know, that's animalistic shit right there, you know? And I mean, I could talk about this, you know, forever, but all that, you know, doubt that person was casting in your mind, and, you know, it's basically, he basically turned you against yourself, which is what,
100%.
Which is what, because then you're like, well, I'm the crazy one. You must be right, because I'm crazy. Yeah. Told me I was crazy. So yeah, I mean, it's just all that stereotypical narcissistic behavior that, like, keeps the blame and focus away from their behavior is what women need to be, you know, wary of. And, you know, there's so many stages of it, you know, love bombing and breadcrumbing, and there's all these things that we now know. But in the true crime space, we do see a lot of those narcissistic behaviors, and a lot of, you know, people, and, you know, Betty Broderick is one. You know, Betty Broderick was a narcissist, and so was her husband. And so there are so many cases where you when you go through it, you're really easily identify those other people who are the same. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
What's really scary to me is when we were all going into lockdown and we all knew in our minds, okay, divorce rates are probably going to go up, but for sure, like domestic violence, like murders,
yeah.
There's other things that are also going to skyrocket. So the fact that people are stuck still this time, I'm sure, with their abusers, like that is terrifying to me. And I still, you know, I don't know what to say to those people, because unless they have a moment where they can get out of that, like what can we even say to those people that, you know, will help them?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the important thing is, you know, there are so many, of these, you know, help organizations you can even like text. And I just think that, you know, I think the important thing is for anybody, and you're right, that is happening more, people who are stuck at home, like with their abusers and such. But I mean, the important thing, and this is for any degree in which, you know, someone is suffering abuse, the important thing is to just know your worth and to know that you're worth not being treated like that. And to know, you know, what would you tell your daughter if she was in this situation? I think so many women, you know, stay for the wrong reasons, and it's really scary because they think they can't do better, or they think they deserve it, or they don't know, you know, they don't value themselves enough to get out. And you're right. I'm sure, I don't know those numbers, but I'm sure that they are sadly, sadly much higher during this time. Which is scary.
Yeah, it is. And I wish there was more I could do, because I swear, like, I try to laugh at everything, but there are some days where this whole past year or so has just been just really, really hard to even get out of bed some days. And there are some days where I just cry all day. And I know that's such a, let's get out of this depressing spot of the conversation. But, you know, it's been so hard.
Yeah. No, it really has. It's been, the thing that we have to remember is we don't have anything to compare this to. You know, there's nothing.
Yeah.
It's not depression. True. It's trauma. You know, I mean, this is something that we don't even have the skill set, because this is nothing that we've ever been through. So, I mean, I believe that in a couple of years, there are going to be new diagnosis, you know, new forms of mental illness that we've never seen before, you know, something relating to, you know, being at home. I think more people are going to get anxiety. I think people are going to forget how to communicate, not through a screen. I think people are going to, you know, get worried to leave the house. They're going to be wearing masks all the time. I don't even know what it is to come. But the only thing we have is a shared trauma. It is a shared time that we all have. And I do think that's something that, you know, OWD fam, you know, has really, you know, seen each other through, because these interactions through the computer, through social media, are what people are clinging to. And I don't take that lightly, you know? I don't take it lightly that people, you know, say to me that, like, oh, it's like hanging out with a friend or something. You know, it's because we're not hanging out with our friends.
Yeah.
And then I'm coming in through your earphones, and I don't take that lightly. And I'm very flattered by it, but I also consider it a great responsibility. So, yeah.
Yeah. Ah, I'm going to cry.
No, I'm a crack too. it's hard, and I don't think we have seen the last of the sad times, because even though we have the light at the end of the tunnel, everything that we've been through this year, it's heavy. It's physically heavy. There are days where I feel like I physically can't get off my couch, or I just want to, you know. And I just think that it's the only thing we have is each other, though. You know, this is a shared experience, and, you know, we've all lost something. We lost, you know, even if you didn't lose your job, even if you didn't lose a family member, we lost our freedoms. We lost the ability to just, like, you know, go meet a friend at the bar and have a drink and a basket of fries. Like, we've lost a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, I don't think anything will return to normal. I think we're looking at a new normal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I can't, you know, I can't see myself leaving my house and feeling even 99% like okay or safe or that I won't get sick or, you know, I think it's always going to be something that I just don't see it going back to quote normal, you know?
Yeah, I don't think it will. Not for a very long time, especially not in New York, that's for sure.
Are things opening back up in New York or everything, is it still pretty much shut down? How is it?
I think everything is at 25% capacity. You know, I've gone into a coffee shop and got a coffee to go and went for a walk with a friend a couple weeks ago. That was as normal as it's been. You know, I've taken public transportation twice this year. I took the bus two times. But, yeah, you know, it's all still pretty weird. Outside, there's a lot of these, like, outside little huts that have been made. You know, they're, like, dining outside, but that's inside, but it's outside.
Oh, yeah, the outside is the inside
which I don't
and all that,
to,
yeah.
I hate being cold, yeah. So I'm not going anywhere towards the outside, so that's a no from me, dog. So yeah, no, people are doing that, but no. It's too cold here. Yeah. Is it cold in Mississippi? It's freezing here.
It's just now getting a little warm, so we're getting there. We're getting there.
Okay, all right, all right.
Well, have you and Patrick seen each other at all since last year, or?
We saw each other once to take pictures in our merch. We were masked and 6 feet aww away. I saw his apartment, his new apartment. And one day I had to go to the office to print merch, and he was in the studio and I was in the office. But we've not, like, really sat down with each other. No, not at all. Yeah, which is crazy.
I know. Well, I guess what I will end this with is maybe what is your favorite thing to come out of OWD or a list of your favorite things that have come from the podcast?
Oh, I mean, it's just the people. It's like, honestly, the people who have supported us and who have reached out. And, I mean, as a performer, my whole life has been, you know, trying to make other people happy or make other people smile or make people forget their problems for 2.5 hours if they come see me in a show. And the fact that I've been able to still do that and people are grateful has been everything that everyone has said that we have given them, they've given me tenfold. So it's definitely been the people and just being a bright aww spot for people. It's a compliment and it's an honor, and I'll never understand it. I'm just like, what? But honestly, the people that I've met, you know, on social media who have reached out, which is the only way I meet people, have truly been so generous that it has truly given me a purpose this year, and I am eternally grateful. And I don't, like I said, I don't take that responsibility lightly. And to be a participant in the true crime space is a blast and it's an honor. So yeah, it's always going to be the people for me. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so glad that you took the time to come on today. And, you know, I just wish you all the best in the entire world ever.
You too. Thank you for having me and for inviting me. And,
oh, yeah.
And your sweet little accent. You might have the best accent I've ever heard. It's a very non-offensive Southern accent. Aww. Like, because Southern accents can be offensive. Okay? I'm going to get some hate mail for that one. But
No. I totally agree.
Oh, thank you, Paige. Yeah, thank you for having totally me on. Thank you so, so much. And thank you for all you do. You're a gem and you're beautiful. And keep doing it because aww you're killing the game. So
thank you, Ellen. So I love you and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, sweetheart. You too. Love you back.